We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
KC Laboratory, sponsored by Emprise Bank.
It's a live edition of the KC Laboratory, presented by Emprise Bank. Nobody loves to bank. They love what banking can help them achieve. Emprise is looking to say yes to those with a dream, whether it's saving for your first home, a new car, starting a family, starting a business. Emprise is your partner in possible. That is Emprise Bank, member FDIC. Our wonderful partners in possible here at KC Sports Network. I'm joined by Maddie Lane. Find him on Twitter at Maddie_KCSN. Hi, hello, how are you? Nice haircut for those that cannot see you right now. You have a very nice haircut.
Thank you. I would like you, for the audio only listeners, for you to describe it to them in great detail.
Okay, so it's short on the sides. Uh-huh. Pretty high, a little high cut. And a little, just like a nice little trim off the top. Some hair left to style, accentuates the broad shoulders extremely well. So there's the breakdown.
I think, that's a lot deeper than we're going to get into this Rams game, because yikes. So perfect. I think that we could probably start wrapping the show up now. Are you happy with this, kid? We can get out of here in about 3 minutes.
I'm completely content with that. Now hit the like button, hit the subscribe button if you're watching. Craig is a little under the weather. We'll leave it at that. So he's not going to be with us today. Hopefully he'll be with us on Thursday. So we have some breaking news, Matthew. Just massive news for the Kansas City Chiefs. They have indeed added more to their running back room. Melvin Gordon, former Denver Bronco, former Charger as well, has signed to the Kansas City Chiefs practice squad, was a significant fixture or planned to be a significant fixture in the Denver offense as recently as this season. He is now a Kansas City Chief, Matthew.
Listen, Melvin Gordon once upon a time was like the original Chiefs killer. I mean, there for a while for the Chargers, Melvin Gordon, if you could extrapolate his stats when he only played the Chiefs when he was playing for the Chargers, he looked like an all-pro running back. He was the first guy that you would watch as a Chiefs fan and be like, okay, this is where you know the Chiefs can't tackle. Because here's Melvin Gordon, who otherwise is an above-average running back, and all of a sudden, not a single player can get him to the turf. Not a single one for these Chiefs teams could get him down on the ground. And it was so disappointing and so frustrating. It really stunk when he left the Chargers, what was it, 2-3 years ago, that he went directly to Denver. And I don't think he ever had the same success in Denver as he did against the Chiefs, but he still ran hard. He made it difficult on them. So like, just from the fact that the Chiefs no longer ever have to play Melvin Gordon, this is an A-plus move. Camera's kicking me out of nowhere just because it wanted to, but I'm back. I'm still here, just like Melvin Gordon is now here with the Kansas City Chiefs. That defense never has to see him again. Like, that's a win. I call this a win just because they never have to play against him.
Okay, so just a quick look at his stats. He's carried the ball 90 times this season already for the Denver Broncos. 318 yards, a pretty pedestrian 3.5 yards per attempt and 2 touchdowns. Now, to be fair, he's on the worst team in the AFC West. He was on the worst team in the AFC West with the worst quarterback and the worst offense, the worst coach. Just so many worsts for that organization right now. I think you're just kind of hoping that, you know, he can have a decent year, you know, in support. And I don't even know. Look, the Chiefs had Rojo kind of situated as a, I don't want to say breaking case of emergency, but it's kind of like inventory, right? Like, it's almost like a little bit of inventory that they're keeping at the running back position. And Rojo's getting the call up, you know, now. He's getting these opportunities now. Because of Clyde Edwards-Helaire's injury. And, you know, there's not a ton of experienced veteran running backs that are going to be out available on the market this time of year that are the same caliber as Melvin Gordon. And look, the big issue for Melvin Gordon is the fumbles. I mean, he's a rosterable, I think, NFL player.
Outside
of the fumbles. That is the big, big issue for him. And Matt Kentner's pointing out 26 career fumbles. He's put the ball on the ground 5 times this season.
Yeah, no, it was a lot. It's been a lot. It's been worse, I think, for Denver than it was when he was with the Chargers. It's just it's an area of his game that has not gotten better with age. Now, to put this in perspective, though, because I do know this is a concern a lot of people are going to have, his career, you know, his fumble percentage per touch compared to, let's go with, I don't know, Ronald Jones, is almost identical. We're looking at like 1.2%, we're looking at 12%, 13% or something like that, right? Like, we are talking about a significant difference between the two, especially considering that Gordon has had significantly more touches than Ronald Jones throughout his career. So there isn't a wild gap just in how often per touch these two players are putting the ball on the turf, on the field, whatever you want to call it. So I do think that is worth keeping in mind when we're giving these guys, presuming that, you know, you still have Jerick McKinnon healthy, Isaiah Pacheco ready, and this is even Melvin Gordon just taking Ronald Jones' place or not, they're not getting more than 5 touches in a game. I wouldn't anticipate either one of them fumbling once every, you know, 5 touches. That's just not the rate they've been on. It's been a bad issue for Melvin Gordon, but it has not been that bad. So I don't want to split hairs there between the two. Fumbling has been an issue. It's been an issue for both these guys. And I guess this kind of leads into the next point. If Melvin Gordon's ever going to factor in on this roster, it's just a practice squad signing, right? It's just a practice squad signing. Yes, they can call him up, but if he's ever going to factor in, it's certainly going to be A, for injury, or B, in place of Ronald Jones. And if you're just losing the quote-unquote ball security of Ronald Jones for Melvin Gordon, I know you're trading in, you know, 6 of 1 for 6 of the other. Is that a concern that people have with Ronald Jones right now? No, that I don't think you should have that same concern with Melvin Gordon either.
Melvin Gordon last year, 203 carries, 918 yards, 8 touchdowns, 4.52 yards per carry. He is not far removed from having a very quality season on our offense that was better last year somehow. I mean, it's true. He had 213 yards in the air too. I mean, this guy had, you know, he had 1130 yards of offense from scrimmage. So there's some value there. And you said injuries, Matthew, and I don't think people realize, maybe they do, but, and we've talked about this some, but like, Jerick McKinnon has not been consistently the healthiest guy either. The Chiefs are very heavily invested in a 7th round rookie a oft-injured wrong side of 30 running back in Jerick McKinnon and Ronald Jones, who we'll see. He's there. So, like, I don't hate the idea of continuing to insulate this room with veteran depth and veteran talent. You know, we talk about, like, the best pass, the second best pass protector on this team. Is it Melvin Gordon now, Matthew?
I think pretty comfortably, right? And I think that's the next place to look into this, right? So I'm going to combine a little bit of, like, the Ronald Jones takes from this past game versus the Rams in here. Ronald Jones got a chance. He had 4 carries, 12 yards. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. I thought he ran hard. He ran downhill. He was aggressive. He was violent. I think his long was like 5 yards or something like that without looking it back up. And it was a good 5-yard run. It's just something the defense is going to remember, that guy that big coming in that aggressively picking up 5-ish yards on that play. Melvin Gordon can do that exact same stuff. He can take 4 carries for 12 yards, but what you can do, you could put him in there occasionally for Jerick McKinnon, or if Jerick McKinnon gets dinged up and you don't want to have him out there pass protecting 30 times in a game, you can put Melvin Gordon out there and you can trust him in pass protection. Back when he was, you know, a young player in the league, his pass protection was atrocious. That was one of the biggest knocks on him as a young Charger, as a young professional player for the Chargers. He worked hard on it. He's pretty good. Not only does he have good technique, can he do it, but he understands who to pick up. He understands protections and blitzes. And if you've watched the Chiefs this year, they are doing a whole lot of stuff with McKinnon to save, not save the offensive line, but save kind of the offensive scheme and the play calling, because they can't always block up a 4-man pass rush. Great. They can't account for a 4-man pass rush plus an extra blitzer. That's falling on McKinnon's lap wholeheartedly a lot. And I don't think right now the Chiefs trust Isaiah Pacheco to make that read and then properly make that block, or to have a good enough chip that's not going to get in the way of his offensive tackle. And I'm not saying that he can't do it. He's fine at it. He's willing to do it. But I don't know if you want to trust him in a situation that matters. I know you don't want to trust Ronald Jones in a situation that matters in pass protection. So yeah, getting somebody like Melvin Gordon, especially without knowing the ultimate long-term health of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who isn't great in pass pro, but can do it, who isn't great at it though, you now get somebody that can step into that role if need be. I think just from those two standpoints, that's huge. That matters a lot to this team and the way they've been playing this year.
You bring up Clyde Edwards-Helaire too. And I think that's another thing kind of just worth talking about too, is just like there's reason to perk your ears up a little bit as the Chiefs continue to add depth to the running back position, because the status of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if he's able to return back to this football team in some capacity at some point here, when is that the case? Is he going to have time to kind of get ready by the playoffs? You know, you look at I think this is a sneakily fragile running back room, and we extremely. Probably we aren't really talking about it like that. And like, we can debate the merits of the running back position, and we can, debate some of that stuff if you want, but you can't just throw anybody back there, especially when it comes to the pass protection game. And you're looking at a group, Clyde Edwards-Helaire often hurt, and he is hurt. He's out. And so now what happens? You kind of get a look at the fragility of this group, because it's way more thin than you're 1 or 2 plays away from this getting real ugly real quick from a depth perspective. So I think it makes a lot of sense to add Melvin Ingram to this group. And you know what? I think there's a chance he's better than Rojo too, honestly. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility either. So I'm gonna ask you, Matthew. There's 2 games called up. You can get called up, right? So you can get as a practice squad member, you can be called up twice, I believe, from the practice squad roster for the game day. I'm going to set the over under of games played at 2.5 for Melvin Gordon.
You going to take including the playoffs?
Including the playoffs. Are you taking
over?
Over? You think 2.5 games for Melvin Gordon?
Yeah. Look at everything the Chiefs done, right? When we talk about it during the offseason, a lot of times here is that the teams will tell you what they think without telling you with words, right? Look at the Chiefs try to put in a claim for Eno Benjamin. Look at the all the different work they've brought in. Who did they else they bring in? Wayne Gallman, running back to their practice squad. They're constantly looking to add other running backs. And yes, it's just been to the practice squad. They did put in a claim for a young running back who was oddly cut from the Cardinals, I believe it was.
Eno Benjamin, but, yeah.
Yeah. So they're telling you that they aren't happy with their current set of running backs, or at least they're not 100% happy with it. And who's to blame them? You talked about it. It's a relatively fragile group. Up until the past two games, you haven't really seen the consistent flashes from Pacheco to think that he is ready to go for the rest of the year. So like, it would make sense that this team is still trying to turn this room over. I think bringing Melvin Gordon is like a, hey, we need a third string running back. Here's a guy that can maybe do more things at a backup level or a third string level than Ronald Jones can. So now we have him on the roster. I think that's what it is. Melvin Gordon can do more things better than Ronald Jones can. It's not like Ronald Jones is great at anything else. So I would not be surprised if by playoff time, assuming he can pick up a playbook and he's a veteran, he's been around the league for what, 7-8 years now. I assume if he can pick up the playbook, I think that, you know, there's a chance he gets to the active roster by playoff time.
And there's a chance that this is his last opportunity. And so some of the ball security things, like there's some points of emphasis that he's probably, you know, got to be prepared for here. He's probably, you know, I think he probably knows that this might be one of his, if not his last chance in the NFL. So he's going to be prepared. He's going to be hydrated. And speaking of hydrated, Tucker Franklin's here to talk to you about yours.
Hey, I got to tell you guys about our friends at Liquid Death. And by now you guys already know that you might see some strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is the water called Liquid Death? Say it with me. It'll brutally murder your thirst. And their infinitely recycled tall boy cans are here helping to bring death to plastic bottles as well. They also donate 10% of their profits from every can sold to kill plastic pollution. I've got the severed lime flavor with me here. I also love the berry flavor. And also, just the straight still water is incredible. I like drinking the water out of the can. It makes you feel powerful, makes you feel authoritative. So here's what you got to do. Go to liquiddeath.com/KCSN to find their store locator tool, or you can go get Liquid Death at your local Target, Walmart, or 7-Eleven. Go check them out at liquiddeath.com/KCSN.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Melvin Gordon is not the only new Chief here in Kansas City. Breaking news that happened hours ago. The Kansas City Chiefs have also signed former Raiders third-round pick Bryan Edwards to their practice squad as well. This is a move that there's nobody on the planet I would rather be talking to about Bryan Edwards becoming a Chief than Matthew Lane. Matthew, how excited are you for this?
I mean, this is great, right? Like this is absolutely great. Every couple of years, actually, every year, it feels like the Chiefs are making some kind of weird waiver wire pickup practice squad edition of a 2-3 year removed draft crush that I had kind of coming out. They signed Justin Reed earlier this year. That was a fun one. That was a guy that I think We didn't quite podcast that year. You'd had been podcasting. I wasn't on a podcast yet when Justin Reed came out, but I loved him coming out. So that was fun. But then now Bryan Edwards was a wide receiver coming out of South Carolina that I really liked a couple years ago coming out of South Carolina. Some, you know, injuries at South Carolina held him down, but I mean, he still had about 800 yards his last three seasons at South Carolina. Here was this big physical wide receiver that ran the vertical route plane really, really well. And so he was just a guy that made a lot of sense for what the Chiefs were missing at the time when the Chiefs still had Tyreek Hill and they were looking for that complimentary wide receiver across from him. And we didn't have any size. They didn't have another vertical threat. They had DeMarcus Robinson running the hell out of some corner posts, but that was about it. They really needed something else. And I thought Bryan Edwards would be a perfect fit. You know, this big physical dude who can run a vertical route and you get the ball in his hands and he plays physical and angry. I thought he was a great fit for the Chiefs a couple years ago. You know, the fit's a little bit tougher now with the wide receiver changeover. They now have a lot of guys that kind of fit this exact same mold, actually. And that's what's going to make this really interesting going forward, right? This is going to make it very interesting, but I love that they got him. Here's a guy that, playing for the Las Vegas Raiders, he still ended up with a 575 yard season last year for the Raiders. For the Las Vegas Raiders, he almost had 600 yards. And they're just like, hey, we'll take a fifth round pick for him because we don't want extra receivers.
You know, I'm looking at some of these stat lines and stuff like that. It's just interesting that they weren't really able to get him super involved. But I mean, he had, yeah, like 571 yards last year for the Raiders and some big games. I'm trying to look at what he had against Kansas City. He had a three catch, 88-yard touchdown, one touchdown performance against the Chiefs. If I remember, it was a pretty big explosive play involved with there. I think you could probably, that's not too big of a reach because three catches for 88 yards, you're gonna have something big happen there, right? I mean, that's 30 yards a catch. But I mean, he's a guy that can win the ball down the field. And he's aggressive, like you said, at the catch point. Just kind of looking at the KC draft guide stuff that we had on him. We put a third round grade on him. Unlike John Gruden, we did not compare him to Terrell Owens. So there is that. But
those are bad. Who'd we compare him to?
We had a James Jones comp on him, which kind of makes out sense as an outside the number ball winner. Yeah. So that's a nice little player comp there. KC Moe. Native, or was raised in KC. I'm trying to remember what high school he wound up going to. I don't know if he did. He moved there before high school, but yeah, I mean, this is an interesting ball winner. And you know, you think about the Justin, you know, Rosses of the world and Bryan Edwards, and you know, like it's good inventory to keep. We talked a little bit about inventory earlier and try not to be too dismissive of the human playing the game, but like, I think this is a smart addition. Do you think this is the question, Matthew?
Oh.
Do you think his role to actually making this roster is going to have to include special teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. So somebody, I was asked what I thought realistic expectations were for Bryan Edwards. And as a big, you know, Bryan Edwards fan, as a guy that I really wanted the Chiefs to get him. When I saw the Falcons had released him, I like tweeted something out immediately like, hey, you know, let's, I think it was even on Thanksgiving or it might've been Thanksgiving Day. I said something about it. And so somebody asked, he's like, you know, it's next year. This is a move. This is a perfect reserves kind of contract thing. Get him in the building to start working on this playbook, getting used to the team. And you hope you get an impact from him next year. And my exact role was the Justin Watson role. I think that's the kind of role that you look for. Now, I don't mean the snap counts, but that's the type of receiver that I think he is. He's this big physical guy that doesn't necessarily run crisp routes, isn't necessarily a guy that you're throwing back shoulder fades to, although I do think he can probably do that a little better than we've seen from Justin Watson, but he's a vertical threat. He's a big receiver that wins vertically by stacking corners and just beating them at the catch point. So I think that's the kind of role that I would envision him competing for next year for the Chiefs. If anything, the problem is, you mentioned him, that's Justin Ross's role. If he's going to be anything in the NFL, that's a role that goes to Justin Ross. That's a role that Marquez Valdes-Scantling currently kind of has. Now, he's faster, he's more dynamic than I think either of those guys, but it's still the same role. The Chiefs play Justin Watson a lot. That's a lot that he might be back. That's a lot of guys kind of competing for that same role. So that's what I was saying is now 2 years later or 3 years later after I really wanted him on the Chiefs because the fit was perfect. It is a little bit of a logjam. I still like getting him in the building. I still like the, you know, the concept of it, but I just, that role's kind of pretty heavily filled for the Chiefs. Now to your point. Yeah. He is not going to be able to make this roster without playing special teams. And from what I'm looking at, hasn't played any special teams so far in the NFL. That's not been part of his MO. So, you know, we'll have to see where that goes. Cause I think that will be a requirement. You want to beat out all these guys I just mentioned. You're going to have to play some special teams and play it well.
And, you know, people are going to look at what he did in Atlanta, which was next to nothing. But I don't think that's an indictment on him.
That team can't figure out how to use Kyle freaking Pitts. I don't care what any of their offensive players do. They can't use the second biggest unicorn of all time at the tight end position worth a darn. That team, whatever they are doing offensively, can be put into any dumpster you can find behind a building, lit on fire, and thrown off a cliff. Nothing that happens to Atlanta's offense matters at all for the NFL.
Agreed. some very stern words there. But it's true. They can't. They struggle to get. It's just so wild what the Falcons did. They go out and they grab Kyle Pitts. And then they go and grab Drake London the next year. And I think there was a regime change in between then. But
trade for a 600-yard wide receiver.
Yeah. And turn around and run the ball to Tyler Allgeier.
And because they won't put in the only quarterback they have they can throw.
There's a reason. There's a reason.
Yeah, they want to lose.
That might actually be the reason too. Marcus Mariota, I just don't think Marcus Mariota and a run heavy offense with like 20 targets a game is really like something to worry about with Bryan Edwards. I'm kind of surprised he didn't get claimed, but you know, whatever. That's a little bit of a surprise if you ask me, but I'm happy he's a Chief, and I think this is the right kind of move, and it's Brett Veach continuing. I would assume to lean on his draft evals and what he believes in. And you know what? He's got a front hand. He's got a front, you know, he's got a front seat view a couple times of what this guy's capable of doing, and he can help a football team. So I kind of like the move. I like the addition, and you know, we'll see what happens with these two guys. It's good players to keep on your practice squad, especially heading into such a crucial time. Chiefs next game is in December. And so, I mean, it's the crucial time of year. The last game of November, though, we probably should address it a little bit more before we get out of here. Just a little bit. I mean, okay. I know this is probably like prime time for you to talk draft or something. Hit the like button, buddy. Hit the subscribe button if you're watching, by the way. Really helps us grow the channel. Really appreciate everybody that's watching. We've got a lot of you watching right now. Really appreciate that.
I'm going to make you predict this right now on the spot, actually, just because I saw this question. So what does the receiver room look like next year? They threw out some options, but what do you think this wide receiver room is going to look like next year?
Ooh, I think you've got Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney. I think you bring back Juju.
Are they going to eat the MVS money, or do you think he's back for sure?
I don't think MVS is back.
Okay, you think they're going to eat it? Okay.
I think they'll trade, eat $4 million. I think it's $4 million they can get out of it, right?
Okay.
I think they have some options they can kind of spread the money out a little bit, but I'll have to look it up. Give me Justin Watson still.
They play him way too much, so I mean, like, I get it.
Yeah, I know. And then I want to say a draft pick, but
okay,
I want to say a draft pick. Give me a draft pick. Okay. So I'll say five. I'll say five for sure. Five. I don't know after that.
Okay. If I had to tell you right now that Bryan Edwards or Justin Ross are going to make this team next year, the active roster, which one is it?
Bryan Edwards. There's a bigger sample size of success in the league, and who knows with Justin Ross's situation.
Sure. Fair.
All right. Hold on real quick. You gave me a perfect amount of time. It's $4 million in dead money if they just outright cut him. It's $7 million in cap savings. So I think I do think I could see
MVS. Yeah, okay. Well, that's That's a lot more palatable.
I'm going to go a little bit behind the scenes. Have you been operating in the discourse that we've had behind the scenes in the DMs as if Marquez Valdes-Scantling is going to cost $7 million to cut? Like all of our conversations over the last 2 months.
Have yes. Been... 100%. And I don't know why. Maybe I could have very easily misread it. I knew you could get out of it after 1 year, but I thought it was one of those that was set up like, yeah, you can get out of it, but it's most likely two. Like I was always just under the impression that it was most likely going to be two unless he just completely tanked. He obviously has not completely tanked. So for $4 million though, and then saving seven.
I think you could trade him. I think you could get an asset for him, honestly, especially like, you know, Mecole Hardman's going to be a receiver on this. I mean, he's going to factor potentially in the free agent market in some capacity. So I
accept responsibility for this, but I have sent you down a deep off season podcast topic now.
It's okay. It's the Rams. It's Josh Perkins was the or Bryce Perkins was the quarterback.
I feel bad for Rams fans right now.
I don't feel bad for him at all, especially Jordan. Jordan did correct me earlier, by the way. Max of 3 practice squad elevations per player. You can get 2 per week. So there is okay. Noted Rams fan Jordan Foote with the update for us there, but I think you might be able to trade MVS and get something out of him, if I'm being honest. I think that's definitely in the realm of possibility. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, leave a comment. Tell us what you want to do with Corey. Corey got mad. He is bad with the cap. He is awful with the cap. And it's always
don't
funny.
Care. Don't care.
I don't want to care. Well, the funny thing is that's Bearcat. Bearcat's had so many conversations with us about MVS. And it's always like Maddie acts like it's always an insurmountable number. And now I get it.
Yeah, of course. The best part is, no, I will directly go to Corey and be like, hey, what does this mean? He'll tell me and I'll be like, are you sure? Like, I'll question him if it's right or if that's what you can do. And he's like, yes, Matthew, I am sure. Like he's talking down to me like I'm his son or something. It's ridiculous.
Once you get going down that rabbit hole, it is always very, very funny. Wait a second. Okay. So before we get all the way into off-season conversation, we probably do need to talk and address the Rams game a little bit more before we get out.
That's fair.
It's probably fair. It's kind of like we've kind of treated it the exact same way though, right? Because we didn't get to the Rams until 30 minutes into the Thursday episode, and we're not getting into the Rams until 30 minutes into the post-game episode. So any other chance to sit on some stuff, to think about some stuff, any single thing stress you out after watching that game, or any single thing that is giving you pause about the future of this program?
No. I can't read much into this. Like maybe you read a little bit into very specific individual performances. So like what I'm really going to dive into this week is the Chiefs like running game and the running back room. I not want to spoil everything I'm going to write, you know, on the kit and the Substack. That's kcsn.substack.com. Make sure you're hopping over there, subscribing to read all of the film breakdowns that we're getting you guys. So I don't want to spoil it all, but I think you're starting to see a clear picture of what the Chiefs have learned their running game has to be, the direction it is going, and why Isaiah Pacheco makes a ton of sense for it. I think you also will come to the conclusion, or at least what I have, I like Ronald Jones actually as being the backup runner. Not like I don't need him in anything that's going to be a pass, but just as a backup runner to fill snaps, to fill carries. I like the concept of him there based on what we saw. But I'm not sold on it that it can't be a Melvin Gordon or something. But I just think the Chiefs' identity as a rushing team might be changing here a little bit. And it's because they're no longer trying to force their running game to fit perfectly into their RPO game. They are no longer trying to make those two things just completely mesh, look identical, be the exact same thing, and what they want to base their run game out of anymore. And I think that's been such a great thing for them. There's just such a big difference between a 3-yard run that's downhill of Pacheco or Ronald Jones hammering into a linebacker at full speed and falling forward versus Clyde Edwards-Helaire kind of like skipping back and forth and just kind of slowly falling down when he hits contact for 3 yards when it's blocked up well, right? So I think, like we're seeing here, just how aggressive these running backs are getting downhill. You're seeing the offensive lines getting to fire off the line of scrimmage a little bit more. And I think you're just getting, they're still going to be inside zone. They're still going to be some of that same stuff. But what you're getting is a lot more downhill. You're getting a more violent rushing attack. And I think that's going to pair better for a team that's mixing in the run rather than trying to go ahead and put that, you know, like as the main part of their rushing offense pairing with the RPO.
We got to fix Isaiah Pacheco's touchdown celebration. Boy, that was brutal. And equally brutal,
his gait.
He celebrates every run. Like he achieved a first down. Like he's pointing towards the first down marker. Then he looks around. He makes sure he's like, oh, I actually kind of like that though.
I think it's great.
I'm kind of here for it. He celebrates every run. It's great. But yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with everything you just said there. Melvin Gordon, I feel like he's playing a lot of zone schemes though, right? Like, I mean, he's been a primary zone runner, so that'll be interesting to look at. One thing I was going to talk about though, when you talk about, hey, pairing the RPO game with, you know, with the blocking scheme with the run game, I mean, the RPO game's not been particularly great this year. I don't think it's been the same that it has been without a Tyreek Hill involved. So I don't know if like it's the end of the world if, you know, if the RPO game, you know, suffers slightly because of this, because that really hasn't been the thing that has, I don't think that's the thing that's really moved this offense forward in a big, big way. I think it's taken a pretty big step back. I don't know if you feel the same thing, but I'm trying to think of how many big RPOs, nothing in between the hashes. I don't feel like they're hitting a bunch in between the hashes in the RPO game or right outside the hashes in between the numbers. I think you're getting some of the flat wheel RPO stuff every, you know, from time to time. But like outside of that, I'm trying to think of a ton of real big plays that they're able to generate with the RPO game.
No, they're not coming. And I mean, part of that is the running scheme. Part of it's been the running backs and the way they're executing it. And sometimes the blocking just isn't great. So yeah, the RPO stuff can go. It obviously isn't ever going to disappear. I just think the Chiefs are kind of learning that they don't have to base their run game out of inside and outside zone to match their RPO game. They can still call an RPO while running inside zone and some form of gap or power scheme run equally. Like I think they're learning they don't have to make all of those things perfectly mirror each other, because anytime the Chiefs show an RPO look, everyone's going to play pass. No one's going to play the run. It's still just going to be up to Mahomes either A, reading out leverage pre-snap, because that seems to be their best RPOs anymore as is, or B, he's still going to try to manipulate a guy that gives him a give to the running back read, and he's still going to try to throw it around him, right? Yep. So there's no reason to try to make the main or, you know, make the primary run what's going to match up with your RPO anymore. There's no reason to just mix in when you want to throw an RPO and get a free couple yards and then run the stuff that your team runs better. I think it's pretty simple, and they're getting there. I think they're slowly getting to that point now, and Pacheco and Ronald Jones, or maybe a Melvin Gordon, run that kind of stuff a little bit better than what we've seen so far.
Big takeaway for me, I think there was some gamesmanship, and I'm going to have something a little bit on the KCSN Substack tomorrow, but like, I think there was some time theft going this week. I think the Chiefs were intent on showing some things and presenting some things to teams that they're going to have to worry about. They're going to have to prepare for. And, you know, it's kind of more prevalent in college than it is in the NFL. Like, it's still a thing, but you know, like in college, time theft's really important because you've got college kids that you're, you know, you only get a finite amount of time, you know, in the building to try to help prepare for a game. But like, time theft still matters in the NFL. Like, and what I mean by that is forcing teams to prepare for looks that you put on film. And I think the Chiefs, especially in the red zone, showed some things where we're about to show some things that are going to at least perk the ears of it's going to make defensive coordinators think. You know, we talk a little bit like the throwback play, the special play, being able to put a special play on tape, especially in the tight red, I think is a very interesting thought there. You know, it's hey, we're going to show this, we're going to force teams to prepare for, you know, this, especially considering, you know, like if you remember the throwback from Sky Moore, to Patrick Mahomes. They'd shown that jet action with Sky Moore a couple times during that game. So it's not like they hadn't shown something similar already. So now you're showing, hey, we can also do this. You got to worry about this as well. They were about to put Colin Saunders on the game. Like just another tendency breaker.
They called the Rams called a timeout when Saunders was out there, and then coming out of the timeout, the Chiefs went to that throwback play. Or I guess it's technically a double pass. So they came up to that play very next. Yeah, the Chiefs were already going to go out there and say, hey, here's something that the Bengals and everyone else were about ready to play is gonna have to pay attention to. And also, Colin Saunders, maybe there was motion coming. He was not lined in the backfield. I think
he was a wing.
He was a wing. I think that keeps getting brushed over right now, is he was not in the backfield, which would have been fine. That would be normal. He was aligned as a wing. I'm trying to figure out if was he about to come in motion and be like a lead blocker on something around the outside? Was this going to be like, I just don't know what was going to happen, because I don't think they just put him out there to block where he was, right? So he was going to do something on the move. I was excited for it. They called a timeout. He was no longer in there, and they came out with another trick play. Like, they were 100% putting stuff out there on film for future opponents to try to read into, and I very much enjoyed it, but it still also left me disappointed. I think, you know, how fun is it to be disappointed by winning 26-10? It's great. It's awesome to be disappointed by a dominant win in which the Chiefs covered a 15.5 point spread that I thought was going to be free money, but I still,
think I'm disappointed. I think I'm just like, nothing about that game, win or lose, or not lose, yes, but win big, cover, win, blowout, like whatever. I just nothing was going to sway how I feel. Really, I mean, Bryce Perkins, you know, like he wasn't good. Like this is a team that's not going to make the playoffs. I don't know. Nothing was really going to change my opinion or make me feel strongly in any way, shape, or form. So I don't know. I was fine. We'll see. There's some other stuff I think we can talk about with some time theft. Like, I think if you look at the totality of that picture, we just talked about Juju Smith-Schuster, I believe. Maybe it was before the show. Juju Smith-Schuster on a snap count. I don't know if we talked about this on the show. Juju Smith-Schuster on a snap count out of concussion protocol. There's no need to put Juju Smith-Schuster on a snap count for concussion protocol. And this is not diminishing concussions. It's just you're either playing or you're not. You're either concussed or you're not. You're not putting someone who's concussed at risk of not playing. So if Juju Smith-Schuster's on a snap count, I think that tells you a little bit about how the Chiefs are treating the Rams. Justin Watson leading the world in their snap count at the receiver position. Hear from Jordan snaps. Foote. Justin Watson's snap count, 64 snaps. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, 44. Sky Moore, 35. Juju Smith-Schuster, 29. They put him on a snap count. And, like, that is not gamesmanship. That is protection. Like, they managed this game. And they managed it to cover. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that tells you all you need to know. Like, I know Andy Reid got up there. He's like, hey, look, we need to clean some things up here in the red zone and all that stuff. Okay, maybe, I don't know, maybe not try the throwback next time. Like, I think he knows. Like, he's just saying that. It's like some of this stuff we're never going to see again. I don't know how much Sky Moore jet sweep we're going to see moving forward.
Well, but okay, that's the only real thing I think I had on the live show. I think the red zone offense is in a sticky spot if you don't have Tony or Mecole Hardman. The Chiefs did not seem completely comfortable with Sky Moore on the jet motion stuff. And I don't know why. He plays fast. The two times they did it, one time it was just, you know, the Rams made a great play and out leverage it. The second time was going to be a touchdown and Justin Watson missed a block, right? Or a big play at the very least, a successful play. So it wasn't that the play wasn't working. They just seemed a little bit more reluctant to run the Sky Moore jet sweep red zone offense that they had run all year with Mecole Hardman to great success. That they ran Kadarius Toney out there when Mecole Hardman couldn't play to do, and they had some success with it. And then all of a sudden it was down to this game. They're like, we're going to do it a couple times, like you said, but really they weren't relying on it in the same way. And so I think that's worth noting. Maybe it was entirely to throw off tendencies for the game. And next week, if there's no Tony, there's no Hardman, they're still just going to go sky more jet motion, sky more jet motion, sky more jet motion the moment they hit the high red zone like they usually do with those other two. Maybe they're going to do that, or they don't feel comfortable. It's just that is something I at least have my eye on going forward. But yeah, besides that, like, you know, what are we going to do here?
I saw this comment from Bearcat. Jordan, if you can throw that up, please. He says that he's like, I mean, if you, Jordan, if you can get that up from Corey, he just posted. There he goes. Tooney missed his first game in his career after getting a practice in. Should tell you everything you need to know about how they felt about the Rams. It's true. I mean, that's like they managed this game. They used this as an opportunity to get healthy, get right. They stole some time a little bit this week, and that's the story of this football game. Stickers, slaps.
Whoa. We're just skipping the defense altogether?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't Craig think will not stand for this.
This was a specific offense discussion. I thought we were just throwing a few takeaways from the game.
No. You cannot do that. Just because Craig's not here doesn't mean the defense doesn't exist. This isn't even on me. You cannot pretend defense doesn't exist just because Craig isn't here.
Hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button because apparently we're going to continue to talk defense. Okay, fine. Matthew, the floor is yours. What do you want to talk about on defense?
Chris Jones, Defensive Player of the Year. Let's talk about it because we're there again. Chris Jones, first half, blowing stuff up. He was nearly unblockable for the Rams. I understand it's not a great offensive line. Maybe the Bengals aren't a great interior offensive line either. Something to, you know, put a feather in the cap for. But Chris Jones continued to be dominant. Frank Clark came back, and you know, we talked a little bit about the snap jumping that he was getting on there and looking pretty good. Andy Reid actually came out today and said that he looked like Frank Clark the first year they got him here before the injuries really started to pile up and the medical issues started piling up. Yeah, I can see it a little bit, but mostly in his run defense. His run defense in this game was stellar. It's back to what it was when the Chiefs first brought him in. And I know Chiefs fans don't love hearing that their super expensive pass rusher that was supposed to come in and get 80 sacks a year, which is just being a great run defender and an okay pass rusher. But man, when you watch that first half of the Rams game, anytime they tried to run the ball, Frank Clark was blowing it up. I mean, he was blowing up plays left and right out there. That's going to matter. I get it. The run game isn't as important. I would rather him be a better pass rusher than run defender, but it matters. What he was doing as a run defender matters a ton. You put that back in there, and then you're just getting some of those Chiefs, vintage Chiefs Frank Clark reps like you got in the first half where he's exploding off the line, flashing the ghost move and the cross chop. That this matters. This stuff matters for a team that is looking to make a deep playoff run. So yeah, the defensive line wasn't great necessarily in the second half, but when they were trying, when there was a little bit of care to this game in the first half, the defensive line, and they were dominating, and it was by the best two players.
Colin Saunders flashed a little bit. George Karloftis has flashed a little bit. It wasn't isolated to just those two guys. They had some moments up front that, you know, I think are promising. Like with Frank Clark, the first step was really, really impressive. And I can know there was, like you talked about snap jumping. Like with Chris Jones a little bit, like it's the same with Frank Clark too. Like but the first step still looked really good. People like go watch Frank Clark highlights from Seattle and look at how dense he is compared to now. Like there's more density to that version of Frank Clark than you see. And like, I think that probably speaks to some of the stuff that he's dealt with because Steve Spagnuolo prefers Frank Clark in Seattle versus Frank Clark in Kansas City. So I don't know. It feels like he's still playing a little bit light, but man, he looked really, really good this week. And hopefully that continues because like, look, Chris Jones still has value. He always did have value. Yeah. He disappointed with his contract, but this is still a valuable football player that can make an impact, you know, during the home stretch. And, you know, he got a little bit of a break on his own. Hopefully, you know, it kind of looks like he's came back fresh from that. Anything else on defense? The rookie secondary was, you know, the rookie cornerbacks were very good. I thought I was very pleased with what we saw out of the rookie cornerbacks. Trent McDuffie, especially, I know he gave up a touchdown, but like, I still think he had a very solid game.
Yeah, he played a good game. I targeted him a couple times. I know there was a touchdown in there. I think he gave up maybe another catch later in the game, but he had a couple pass breakups, I think I remember correctly seeing. So McDuffie's been as good as I think advertised. There's nothing to nitpick. Even the touchdown he gave up, the Chiefs didn't run cover zero, but and they essentially sent six. Then they had a spy, so he had no help, and the pressure just simply didn't get there at all. There was nobody still just playing a curl zone over the middle of the field to defend against the slant. So, yeah, he gave up a touchdown in a hard spot. No, I'm not making excuses there. He just, it happens. It is what it is. He played great. I thought Joshua Williams made a couple nice plays. Yes, teams are going to still throw at him. And yeah, he might give up some catches. And guess what? If he gives up a couple tough catches against the Bengals or even gives up an easy one or two, let's not freak out. Let's remember everything else that's happened up to this point in time because he's played really darn well. Legarius Sneed, Legarius Sneed, still really good. Still great. I think the Chiefs might, to protect him from himself, I know they don't want to move him out of the slot. I know they don't want to. But man, if he has to keep inserting himself to make these tackles that he has to, I am afraid it's going to lead to an injury eventually. There's just a few knocks he's taken out. And even outside of, you know, being looked at for concussion, there was a couple other big impacts he had. This isn't a guy that's a 215-pound, you know, strong safety playing in the slot that's made to do this, right? He's still a cornerback body frame, right? So having him constantly insert into the C-gap to have to make a tackle on a run or try to submarine a blocker maybe isn't ideal. I'm not saying Trent McDuffie's going to be great at it either, but like they need to figure out something to where he doesn't have to do it all the time. Because the last thing the Chiefs can afford is Legarius Sneed missing time or being injured once it gets to playoff time. They need him. He's their, by far, their biggest playmaker on, you know, outside of the defensive line in the secondary. Nobody else is producing big plays like that. Trent McDuffie's been great. He's not producing turnovers. Legarius needs the guy doing it. So like they need him to be healthy and 100%. They kind of need to start saving him a little bit from some of these big, you know, collisions he's having.
It's stickers, slaps, and game balls time, Matthew. If you're in the comments, first hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. We have 17 Chiefs shows every week. You can watch all kinds of great stuff. Bunch of former players involved. All that good stuff. Got some really cool stuff. Matt Castle breaks down plays every week. So does Derek Johnson. So we got some pretty cool stuff going on. But tell us who your game ball goes to. We're going to give a sticker and a slap, butt slap and a good job. Spirits is normally Craig. Craig can have it. I'm going to go a helmet sticker to Isaiah Pacheco. And it's specifically because of this. He would be a 1,000-yard rusher if he had started 17 games this year. And Brett Veach, maybe I should give this to Brett Veach, actually. For say, he thinks there's 1,000-yard rushers in the seventh round. Isaiah Pacheco would be a 1,000-yard rusher with a 17-game sample size of the opportunities he's getting right now. And there's still actually an outside chance that he's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher this year. There are 6 games remaining. I believe he has 455 yards on the ground. There's an outside shot. He could still be a 1,000-yard rusher. So I'm going to do a hybrid Brett Veach, Isaiah Pacheco helmet sticker for this week. Matthew, butt slapping a good job goes to.
Okay, I'm going to give out Craig's whole last bottle of vodka for him as well. We're giving it to Nick Bolton. Nick Bolton continues to play better, you know, each week. I think we got to the mid-ish point of where we are in the season. So not week 8, but, you know, week 6-ish. And there was some ups and downs for Nick Bolton. He's really turned it on since then. He's been exceptional. And we talked about it in the live post games. You know, they're going to go too far into it if you want the whole conversation kind of get to the end of that. But Nick Bolton played really good. Yet again, he finds himself in the perfect clutch spot to catch the tip pass from Carlos Dunlap for the interception to essentially seal the game. He made a couple tackles for loss where it seemed like he was actually reading the play out quickly rather than just run blitzing. And I don't mean that to be as a shot. That's just the way a lot of the negative plays came early in the year. As the year's going, he seems to be seeing things a lot quicker. He seems to be getting more up the speed, transitioning over to Mike, playing better and better kind of each week. So yeah, it's going well for Nick Bolton. I think if I want to pick a nit, there was a deep crosser that he didn't quite track very well. Yeah. Ooh, okay. Your Mike linebacker that was never great in coverage couldn't run and get the deep over out. Big deal. And that's really about it. So good, complete game from Nick Bolton. He can have the whole ass bottle of vodka this week. butt slap and good job is going to my Big 12 champs, the TCU Horned Frogs, heading to Arlington, Texas to take out the K-State Wildcats and go to the college football playoff. Can't wipe that look off your face. You knew it was coming at some point in time. The Horned Frogs are out. They're going to Arlington. They are going to the college football playoff. Horns out, baby.
Yikes.
Being Tucker D. Franklin riding with the Hypnotoad all year.
Look, we have a whole channel and a third of it's devoted to K-State. And you're just going to sit here and troll.
There is no troll.
There's no believe. You believe it. I know you believe it. I know you believe it. Jordan, if you want to pick who gives a game ball out or who the chat gives a game ball out to. So
good health.
Good health. Travis Kelce, sure. Why not? The most,
he always deserves it.
Most receiving yards in an 11-year career. And he's only played in 10 and really only 9. Is that right?
Do you know what Travis Kelce did to Jalen Ramsey?
Yes, he embarrassed him on national television.
I need Craig. He beat him like a drum. Get us out of here. He beat him like a drum. You ruined it.
That's going to do it for the KC Laboratory. Thank you so much. Get well, Craig. We love you. Catch you later.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.